So we come back to the play. Now it's becoming like a play. Play of Brahman and Maya. And so question arises though, is there a way to go into a state or enter into a state which is beyond this? Well, Indian thought would say yes. And experience, and Shrivinda will affirm that, confirm that. But we cannot go into that without the permission of Maya. She has to grant it. If she doesn't grant, you cannot go. And there are nice, interesting stories about it. Shrivinda himself has said. That's why when Shrivinda was asked that is the mother's, can she give us Nirvikalp Samadhi? She said, many things more. She can give you Nirvikalp Samadhi and many other things because all of them are her creation. She is the one who makes us experience Nirvikalp Samadhi by a trance of self-absorption. She is the one who brings Sagun Brahma. She is the one who brings Nirgun Brahma. She is the one who is all the gods. She becomes their Devatma Shakti. All of this, it is she. So we have that passage in Savitri where in the world soul where Ashupati is at that last bit before he takes a leap into the Ishwara and Shakti. That is the last. But right now at the Brahman and Maya, that poise where he discovers the Mahamaya come as Kali, and she, the ages are the footfalls of her tread. Everything is her conception because she is the conceptive power of the divine. Whatever she conceives, Prakriti will create as form and name. So she is the conceptive power. So Shrivinda describes one arm, half parted the eternal veil. A gesture came as of worlds thrown away. And of course, there are so many ways of looking at it, but to my consciousness, it appeared that the Divine Mother comes and she has thrown away the worlds. You want these? Take it. You deserve it. Any of the worlds. Or you want to pass into the beyond? You can go. And Ashupati experiences an atom of her illimitable self. He fell at her feet, unconscious, prone. So this was good, I remembered. So the Maya not only limits individuals, it limits worlds. So therefore there are countless worlds, all are the play of Maya, because this power of delimitation, she can apply anywhere. She can create a blade of grass. And she can create system of worlds, countless worlds, because he's infinite. So where will be the end of which world? All of them are the play of Maya. If you want to use the word Mahamaya. So nothing can be in this creation. And there's a very interesting story in Shiv Puran where one of the rishis, when Shiva and Parvati are sitting together, and Bringi Rishi, so he was the one who used to pray to Shiva. And he went into a trance state and long time he remained in Samadhi. And then he came out. When he came, suddenly he saw Shiva and Parvati sitting together. Whole household is there. Very similar to, what happened with Shrivinda and the mother. So he suddenly sees that, he loved Shiva, that trance-bound Shiva. So he says, what has happened to him? There is by his side the great lady who is sitting. And she is making nice things. There is Ganpati, there is Kartike, there is Nandi. So he is very confused because before he went into trance, he was the only one taking care of Shiva. He thought, I am a very special person. Now everybody has to go through Parvati. So he thinks that Shiva is probably, something not right. So he has to teach him a lesson. So Shiva and Parvati come together to give the jnana, and all these sages are there. Bringi Rishi is also there. So everybody at the end of the discourse bows down, and then they have to do a parikrama. Now they are sitting together. This Rishi does not want to do parikrama of Mata Parvati. So he says, he tries to hem and haw that no, it's okay, I have done inner parikrama. No, you can have the joy. So he doesn't want to take parikrama both together. So he becomes a little insect. which flies over the jata of Shiva, ignoring Parvati, and he comes. I have done the parikrama. So Mata Parvati says, I see that you don't need me. Okay, I am withdrawing myself from you. He becomes dust. He says, where am I? He's totally, because we cannot do even yoga without the help of the very same, you know, people who say Maya, Maya, can they do? Yoga is done in the body, not in a disembodied state. Everywhere she is there. But what is her purpose? That Sri Aurobindo will tell us in a later chapter. But right now it's enough that Brahman and Maya are one in their essence. But for the sake of creation, when the Lord takes out his consciousness and puts forth, it is his consciousness, so she builds forms, name through the agency of Prakriti. Now there comes the Purushayan Prakriti. So first in the relation, what is Prakriti? Maya conceives, Prakriti executes. That's the basic fundamental working. So she only has become Prakriti, but as an executive agency. So Prakriti has also all the powers, but she has to fill in all the details and execute. So this is another line of experience. So there are three experiences that people spiritually one has. One is of Brahman and Maya. The other is of Purush and Prakriti. So Purush and Prakriti is one of the experiences which is well known in Sankhya, and the great sage Kapil Muni, and Shri Krishna says, among the sages I am Kapil, who is the son of Manu and grandson of Brahma, son of Kardam Rishi, sorry, but he is also regarded as the first, you know, Manu in the sense that as the subtle being who embodied. So son of Kardam Rishi and Devahuti, and of course Brahma has given them the order to create. So there is a very fascinating story that there's a long story. So Kapil Muni is there. So he gives the system of Sankhya. But he is well known that one day he is sitting in his cave and meditating, and the children of King Sagar, 60,000 children. Okay, these are all symbols, not like actual 60,000 children. 60,000 energies of Sagar, let's put it like that. Or for a king, the entire praja is the child. Whatever. So they all go and they are doing an Ashwamedh Yajna, and Indra plays a trick. So what Indra does, he ties, because he wants him to not to succeed in the Ashwamedh Yajna. So he ties the horse near Kapil Muni's ashram, near him. So these people keep searching. At the end, they reach Kapil Muni's ashram. They see that horse is tied there. And they start prodding the sage. You are trying to play a trick with us, fooling us. You are the one who stole the horse. You think this, you think that. And suddenly, Kapil Muni opens his eyes. And when he opens the eyes, all 60,000 are burnt to ashes. By the way, this story, which is in Sankhya, made me always feel that there is a basic contradiction in the philosophy and this story. Because if Prakriti is different from the Purusha, that's what Sankhya says, then what was that power that operated from Kapil Muni? Tremendous power. It burned to ashes. So then they all come, they come to know, and the long story short, he says, well, now I cannot do anything. It is only if Ganga comes from above and purifies them that they will come alive. And three generations follow. Sagar tries, doesn't, and his son, I think, Uttang, anyways, name may be something else, but with U it starts. Then the third is Bhagirath. So Bhagirath tries, then finally Ganga comes. And all of them, she goes into Patal, becomes Patal Ganga, and all of them come back to life. Now Kapil Muni gave this system Sankhya. So we have in Indian Sanatan Dharma these three main branches. There are others which are minor schools, six main schools, but others which are like Vaisheshika, Nyaya, they are not much in repute today. So, but three have persisted. So one is Vedanta. Brahman and Maya is the Advaita Vedanta. We have already spoken about it. Second is Sankhya, which Sri Aurobindo speaks about. And the third is Yoga. So these are the three schools. So basically, Advaita Vedanta speaks of Brahman and Maya, but Sankhya speaks of the Purusha and Prakriti. So Sankhya, why it is a very powerful system? Because it actually starts from the ground. So it started studying that in all of nature, what is the primary thing? What is that fundamental thing which you can catch? So they said Anu. See, again, Vaisheshika talks about Anu. So it went into, they had their own study, research, whatever in their own laboratory. Then it was located in Nalanda, which they burnt the invaders. But he studied and discovered it's Anu. Then he went, what is it that is behind the Anu? So he goes to Paramanu. Then what is behind it? So he went on to discover that there is behind it another, not even Anu and Paramanu, but in ether there is the material called Padartha. This is very fascinating. Science is yet to discover that original. Where does Padartha come from? He reaches the same conclusion that modern science has reached. Energy, which is Prakriti. Amazing. That's why it is so appealing. So how does that energy or Prakriti create? So the Panch Tattvas, it modifies itself, the etheric element modifies itself, becomes the Vayu, aerial element modifies itself, becomes Agni. Agni modifies itself, becomes Jala. Jala modifies itself, Prithvi. And I could talk for an hour on this because this is so fascinating, so true. And as I said, in human beings you can see it. Akas Tattva. Everywhere and yet primarily here. And then the Naad, the voice, the speech, the thought, that is the Akashya Tattva. And then there is the aerial element, the lungs, the breath, aerial. And then there is the fire element, deep inside the heart, the dynamic impulsion. And then there is the Jala Tattva, abdomen, the seat of all troubles. And then there is the Jada, the physical element. It's very fascinating and even can be applied in Ayurveda. Anyway, so we'll not go into that. So they said that the five elements and the Trigunatmak Prakriti. So Prakriti itself has three modes. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. So they are her operating methods. So Sattva is the principle, well, Tamas. Let's start with that. Tamas is the principle of inertia, Newton's first law of motion. Rajas is the principle of movement, Newton's second law of motion. And Sattva is the principle of balance, Newton's third law of motion. So all of them, he understood, and they are everywhere. So it's not like Tamo, Rajo, Sattva gun applies only to Jada matter. Human beings can be very tamasic. If you sit in their company, you will after some time do even if they are talking very high philosophy, even more. Then they are Rajogun Sampanni Vyakti. If you go in their company, oh, let's go. So you'll feel energized and all kinds of things. There is no direction. Let's go for food, let's go shopping. Rajogun, active. And then there is the Sattogun, which will say, look here, you know, too much shopping is not good. See whether it is need or desire. So Sattogun will bring balance. It brings balance. So everything and every human being has all the three guna active one time or the other. And everything in creation, from food to the gifts that we give, for example, gift given tamogun dan, which brings murta and andhata, which brings delusion to the giver and the receiver, tamogun dan, tamarupi. What is it? When we give something without consideration of deshkal patra, you have given. But you have given, it's like giving a knowledge to somebody, the same thing that, you know, all is Brahman, he says, oh, wonderful. He is beyond dualities, I can do anything. It will bring foolishness in him and foolishness in you. So the Gita cautions, na buddhi vedam jana. So this is important. The second is Rajogun. So Rajogun, what it does, the dan given in Rajogun is that at least the person should praise me. Or crudest is, give me back something. At least he should nominate me for Nobel Prize. Or so on and so forth. The extreme Rajogun, crude Rajogun. Or he should praise me. Oh, you have given me so nice. And not once. Keep praising me all life. Then there is subtler Rajogun. He need not praise me. At least he should time to time acknowledge. Then comes Satyagun. Satyagun says, I must do what I must do according to the Shastra. Desh, Kal, Patra, everything it will consider and do. What needs to be done? Balance, harmony, equilibrium. Satyagun people love harmony. They love equilibrium. And then there is going beyond the three gunas, which the Gita speaks of. The Nirguna Guni or Trigunatit Bhav Sabhasachi. So they discovered all this. Such a wonderful system. You can apply it anywhere in the world. Anywhere in life. And it will never fail. Everything can be fitted into this. Then beyond the three gunas and the nature, they talked about how does the principle of individual comes in. Now here comes very interesting. On one side, there is the ahankar, which creates the sense of separativeness. And then there is the purusha. So Sankhya speaks about multiple purushas. This one of the nutty points for the Shuddha Dvaitin. We'll read that in next chapter, maybe when we meet in February. That is there the truth of individuality? Sankhya says yes. The one purusha becomes the many purushas. It says they have discovered this in there. But the prakriti is universal. There is nothing like my prakriti. But I call it as my prakriti. But actually it is universal. Everything that is in me is everywhere in everyone. Only the combination is different. Some people, some combination, you have one kind of. Another, so personality, everything comes out of that. And of course, there is the principle of Mahas, which is takes you to the next level. So how does prakriti act? According to Sankhya, it's basically jada, mechanical. It is the consciousness of the Purusha, the light of the Purusha, the intelligence of the Purusha which falls into Prakriti and stirs her to action. Otherwise, it's only caught in mechanical movement. And if you withdraw this light from Prakriti, the Purusha discovered that he is never bound. So comes the great saying that none is bound. None is free, none seeking to be free. The Purusha of his own choice and Purusha of his another choice can reverse himself. Sounds very simple, but now comes the technical part. Sri Aurobindo describes this in Savitri and in one of his plays, Vasavdatta. And it can be applied in real life. So, in real life, or the first poise relation of Purusha and Prakriti is Purusha is a helpless slave of Prakriti. Wherever Prakriti takes him, he goes there. Prakriti may drive him. There is a nice new food joint. Come, let's go. Purusha follows. Oh, you will have fun in that casino. Go there. Purusha follows. He is like a helpless baby. Caught by the Purusha and just simply on a trail where Prakriti takes. He is a slave. So in Vasavdatta, the prince comes, no? And he meets Vasavdatta. And how does he present himself? You know, I am your slave. And she is very happy. If a man says, I am your slave. But then comes the next poise. And the next poise is they become equals. He begins to understand her, study her, and she begins to understand him. So now there is the little bit freedom which is beginning. And then comes the highest phase where the Purusha becomes the Lord, Adhyaksha, and he decides and Prakriti follows. So human beings go through these three stages. One, when the soul is completely subordinated to nature. So there is no point of saying someone in that stage, you know, there is divine. If nature wants, then only he will feel. Probably there is something. Otherwise, it's completely under the grip of Prakriti, which is Jadas. Intelligence is lost. That's why it is called Jad Buddhi, Jad Mati, because the intelligence is completely absorbed in Prakriti and one is caught in that mechanical life of habit and believes that is the only truth. Then next stage of evolution, slowly, something in us begins to want to understand what is life, what is creation, who am I? What is this world? Now there's the second poise. The third poise is that one begins to say, this I want, this I do not want. So the three names for these are, first is Anish. Anisha, not Lord. First poise of the Purusha is Anish. Though he is technically the Lord, but as the man says that, you know, I am the Lord of the house and I have my wife's permission to say so. He cannot say without her permission. Or he is looking towards her and then he says, you know, I am the Lord. But I have her permission to say so. Anish. He has forgotten his lordship. Second is, he becomes Sakshi. He becomes a witness, student of himself. And the third is, he becomes the Anumanta, sanctioner. Chalo, let's go for a movie. No, I don't want to. I have some other engagement. Let's go for food. No, maybe. Yes. Making choices based on his own inner reflection. Intelligence. Now what is happening? The intelligence is getting released. Intelligence is such a crucial thing. So intelligence belongs to that and it gets released. As the intelligence gets released, we begin to understand the importance of choices and we begin to make choices very deliberately with conscious thought, with reflection, by standing back. So these are the three poises which are possible and that's what is being described. But Shobindu brings his own beauty in it, and the beauty is that he says in Sankhya, Prakriti and Purusha are forever two. But they join only because Purusha's light tends to give Prakriti her consciousness in it. Actually, in itself, it is jada, unconscious. But Purusha makes her conscious. But it can withdraw the sanction. Prakriti will continue. Purusha is free. So why is Sankhya brought in multiple Purusha? That is also interesting. It raised the question, if there is only one Purusha, then one person's freedom should lead automatically to everybody's freedom. That we don't see. So it logically, very logical system, it says there are multiple Purushas. So that's how it went. So Sri Aurobindo says, while it is true in experience, is very important stage with practical implications in yoga, to understand the difference and practical utility, Sri Aurobindo says, though Prakriti and Purusha are one, that is his ultimate truth. But, and why? He will tell us that. But practically, you have to take your stand in the beginning that soul and nature are two different realities. But in reality, no. But you have to start from there. Otherwise, you will completely get lost and confused. He says it everywhere in the Gita. Of course, the Gita speaks about it in chapter 2. Shobindu in Synthesis of Yoga, the witness spirit. We have to learn to be a witness and then the Anumanta. Then only we can think about ultimate. So this is one thing which Shobindu says, practical importance. How are they one? So they are one because Prakriti doesn't end with the Sattvagun. That's where Sri Aurobindo's beautiful link comes. I would say link because the Gita hints at it. Gita says that there is my Prakriti, Sri Krishna's Prakriti. And it uses the word para Prakriti, my Prakriti. Now obviously that Prakriti is not subject to the three guna, because then he says, now I will tell you, after speaking of his Prakriti, he says, now I will tell you about the lower Prakriti. And there he describes the, you know, the Sankhya. That means there is a Prakriti of the divine, the para Prakriti. So if this Prakriti, we can keep upgrading, it doesn't end here. It can go beyond Sattva in the trail and reach the para Prakriti. Para Prakriti is fully conscious. It is the divine's own Prakriti. It is fully conscious, all capable. So Purusha and Prakriti are a miniature play, but the real play is of the Ishvara and Shakti. But that comes later. So that's how logically that Purusha is again miniature of that supreme reality, and the Prakriti is a miniature of the Para Prakriti or Divine Mother or Shakti, which will come later. But right now he'll explain to us the relation between the two because it's pragmatic. And there's a very nice story about it, that someone asked the mother, that mother, will you please tell us about Purusha and Prakriti? It's there from Synthesis, Witness Soul. So mother says, I don't know, you ask Nalini. You see, mother's play. Nalini thus says, if mother says she does not know, then I must say I am completely ignorant. That is he still having that idea that I know? Then mother says that, well, you know, they are two poises of one truth. Prakriti quiescent is absorbed in the Purusha. Purusha, which is dynamic, becomes Prakriti. And we can take it as a very practical example. I can be sitting, gazing. That is Purusha. I can become active. That is Prakriti. It's the same I. So he takes us to that. But first he says something very interesting. There is a state of being experienced in yoga in which we become a double consciousness. Many of us don't understand, but it comes in yoga and it can lead to so much misunderstanding and confusion about people. One on the surface, small, active, ignorant, swayed by thoughts and feelings, grief and joy, and all kinds of reactions. The other within, calm, vast, equal, observing the surface being with an immovable detachment or indulgence, or it may be acting upon its agitation to quiet, enlarge, transform it. This is a stage which every yogi passes through. And some would stop there. They'll say, we have nothing. Okay, let us be active on whatever on our surface personality. How does it matter? Inwardly, I have discovered that higher state. Many yogis do that. And this is a classical example of Swami Vivekananda. That sister Nivedita, when she comes back after a tour, she asks Ma Sarada, one thing I want to know, I don't understand this person. So she says, nobody understands him. Even his own people don't understand him. They used to complain about him. She says, no, I know he is a great yogi. My problem is something different. So what is it? She says, I have seen when he talks about Brahman, he is so vast, impersonal, universal, he takes us somewhere. But you tell him something against India, he is all folded sleeves about to punch. What is this person? Two things at the same time. Then she says something very interesting. She says, you know, you don't understand this. It is deliberately the Mahamaya, Ma Kali. She has deliberately put a little veil of anger over him. Otherwise, he'll run away. And Sri Ramakrishna had told this because he used to go into those states. Suddenly he says, you know what? Because one day he experienced himself only head. Everything else is as if non-existent. So it was a very scary experience. It can be. And then Sri Ramakrishna says, so, very nice, very nice. I have told mother, I have locked your gates to nirvana, to moksha. He was wanting to be absorbed. He didn't allow. And I have given the key to the divine mother. She will give you only when she wants to give you. Finished. You may try whatever you want. But you have a work to do and she is not going to give you that key. And then he would tell his disciples, you know what, Narendra, don't go by what he does and what he... People used to complain. He is sitting with that person, he can be so garrulous, all this. She used to tell, you know what, the day... Thakur has said, Sri Ramakrishna has said, the day Narendra knows who he is, he would run away, he won't stay here. So to hold him for doing the work, she is making him. And we know that last 2 years how he suddenly, you know, underwent a transformation and transformation in that sense. So there is this dual being. And most yogis would go with that. They wouldn't work towards transforming it. They say, how does it matter? Inwardly I am free. And there are so many examples of so many yogis. I could go on. So she says, he says about now Purusha and Prakriti. The Purusha, so page 361, okay. Somewhere in the middle. In the same way, like just as Brahman and Maya, we can become aware of it. Again, as self and Maya, or you can become aware as Purusha and Prakriti. It's not like there are two realities. Purusha separate from Prakriti, the conscious being standing back from the activities of nature. But this is an exclusive concentration which limits itself to a spiritual status and puts away from it all activity in order to realize the freedom of Brahman. This freedom is always there with Brahman. He can always withdraw back. So, but you are in creation, you cannot withdraw without the sanction of Brahman, of course, but Mahamaya has to open the gate. Few lines below. It is the power of the self. Prakriti is the working of the Purusha, conscious being, active by its own nature. The duality then of soul and world energy. World energy is Prakriti. Silent self and the creative power of the spirit is not really something dual and separate. It is biune. They are one. That's what we see in certain aspects of Ardhanarishvara. They are biune. Or in that Shivlingam, the divine soul and the material nature joined together, and the full hooded serpent on top, the symbol of Kundalini. So many ways to discover this biune reality. Tantra has done this too. As we cannot separate fire and the power of fire, it has been said, so we cannot separate the divine reality and its consciousness force, Chit Shakti. We'll go down below. On page 362, the last paragraph. The conscious being, Purusha, is the self as originator, witness, support and lord and enjoyer of the forms and works of nature. As the aspect of self is in its essential character transcendental, even when involved and identified with its universal and individual becomings, so the Purusha aspect is characteristically universal individual and intimately connected with nature even when separated from her. Few lines below. The experience of Purush Prakriti, the spirit of conscious being in its relation to nature, is of immense pragmatic importance. For on these relations, the whole play of consciousness depends in the embodied being. So it's so important to first practice to learn to be a witness in the true sense, not the mental witness, but to just be the inner witness of the works of Prakriti. Not to be carried away here and there everywhere, but just to practice that inner witness state. If the Purusha in us becomes aware of itself as the witness and stands back from nature, that is the first step to the soul's freedom. For it becomes detached and it is possible then to know nature and her processes, and in all independence, since we are no longer involved in her works, to accept or not to accept, to make the sanction no longer automatic but free and effective. We can choose what she shall do or not do in us, or we can stand back altogether from her works and withdraw into the self-spiritual silence. In practice, this is Shobindo, mother, this is indispensable stage. Otherwise, we'll keep saying all life is yoga, therefore everything I am doing is yoga. No. First step is to, especially because we have to go past the lower nature into the higher nature. And we have to first step out of the three gunas, see how they are playing, interacting, dragging, all this. The Gita uses term swadhyaya. That means you have to become a student of yourself. So this is only as a sakshi we can do swadhyaya. We can become student of ourselves. And therefore, and the Purusha can cease to be subject, anish, which majority of people are anish. They are not ish. They are not, they can't govern their prakriti. They simply say, what can I do? It's my nature. So that's a bound state. It's a state of bondage. We cannot imagine transformation while we are in that stage. It's a stage of abject bondage. So, anisha and become lord of its nature, Ishwara. So, from that stage, through the sakshi, it moves towards Ishwara. and then starts becoming the Anumanta who sanctions or refuses the sanction. This is the practical aspect. And of course, Sankhya developed it. He speaks of that. It is energy. Prakriti is nature power, an executive power. Of course, he will tell us it's from the Maya. So Maya is conceptive. She is conceptive and formative, whereas nature is creative, dynamic force. So what nature does? Maya conceives and forms, like this is how it should be. Now nature has to execute. So she will bring up all the elements together, all the tattvas of the Sankhya, and combine them in various energy combinations, sattva-gun, rajogun, tamogun. Then she will fit them together, panchatattva, panchabhut, and then she will build forms for ultimately for the Purusha to inhabit, multiple Purushas. But actually this is a proxy game or a preparatory game. The real game is of Ishwarayan Shakti, but that will come to little later. That's the higher game. So Prakriti develops, okay, from consciousness. For consciousness belongs to the Purusha. Prakriti without Purusha is inert, mechanical, inconscient. Prakriti develops as its formal self and basis of action, primal matter, and in it manifest life and sense and mind and intelligence. But intelligence too, since it is part of nature and its product in primal matter, is also inert, mechanical, inconscient. See, this is why today's science has stumbled upon the conundrum of consciousness. They can't explain consciousness. So one thing is that it's part of nature, because they are studying consciousness as it is involved in nature. But there is another view which has already come up in science, in not yet mainstream but top scientists, that consciousness is primary and fundamental. And one of the persons who spoke about it is a Nobel laureate in the beginning of 19th century, previous century. He changed the understanding of modern physics by a theory today we know as Max Planck theory. Max Planck says that, well, he is a Nobel laureate, he is a big name in physics, and he went on to say that, well, the only way I can explain everything is that consciousness is primary and material reality is secondary. So this scientists are intuitively beginning to talk about it, because there are two ways we can look at intelligence. One is as part of Prakriti, involved in it, or as free, like a universal intelligence which is operating everywhere. Few lines below. The Purusha becomes free by drawing back from Prakriti. It becomes master of her by refusing to be involved in matter. Nature acts by three principles, modes or qualities of its stuff and its action, which in us becomes the fundamental modes of our psychological and physical substance and its working. And these three modes are everywhere: the electron, which is the moving, and the neutron, which is stable, and then we have the proton. Okay, so these are the three, and you can see it everywhere. In atom this operate, these three things. There is a force of inertia, there is a kinetic energy, and there is a equilibrium, need of equilibrium, right? Everywhere we see it. So he says that what are these three modes? Shrivindo describes to us the principle of inertia, the principle of kinesis, and the principle of balance, light, and harmony. When these are in unequal motion, her action takes place, disequilibrium. Then she acts, because there is a need to create equilibrium. So she acts. When they fall into equilibrium, she passes into quiescence. Purusha, conscious being, is plural, not one and single, while nature is one. All these positions of the Sankhya we find to be perfectly valid in experience when we come into direct inner contact with the realities of individual soul and universal nature. But they are pragmatic truths, and we are not bound to accept them as the whole or the fundamental truth either of self or of nature. So this is where Shobindo begins to diverge from the traditional Sankhya. and naturally it creates a kind of duality. So, last bit, page 365. It is the reality the self that takes the position of the conscious being regarding and accepting or ruling the works of its own nature. An apparent duality is created in order that there may be a free action of nature working itself out with the support of the spirit, and again a free and masterful action of the spirit controlling and working out nature. It's very easy to understand that all earth belongs to the Lord. Sab bhumi gopal ki. That's true. Vasudeva kutumbakam. But there can be a misapplication. So it doesn't mean that I'll suddenly walk into somebody's house. Sadhu can. This is my house. Okay, maybe you take food and go. No, I want to stay here. There is nobody's house. It's an illusion. Now you see the problem. All earth is one. Now why this is done, multiple purushas? Even all beings are one in the deepest sense. This multiplicity is required because it's easy for earth to change. If I have my house, I'll take care of my house. If I say that, well, ultimately, mohalla and city, everything is one. So I'll say, okay, somebody will take care. But if I say this is mine, I'll take care of that. So that's why it is created multiple purushas, so that we have our own. It is one nature, and yet because it's one nature is very clear. Whether it be water, air, sunlight, there are no boundaries. Even earth, there are no boundaries. But it's needed to create for ease and facilitation of working out the diversity. That's why it is required. So that's why all of us have our own little corner of darkness, our problem, which is part of the universal shadow, which we don't see in ourselves, but see other people's shadow. But actually, we all share our own cross, something of the darkness, which is our share. And Mother says it's a grace that it is like this, that you have only your difficulty. But imagine the divine beings have to take the burden of entire nature. Because he cannot say, Mother and Sri Aurobindo cannot say, no, no, I'll take care of my nature. They have to take care of all the natures. Not only that, as the master of integral yoga, they take upon themselves the burden of all our disciples' nature. That's how we have those statements from Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. Where, you know, even Sri Aurobindo at one point tells her, don't tell them that they can get away with anything. And the mother is saying that he told. So sweet. Because they are taking the burden. Mother says, when anybody, any of the disciples, something happens, I look inside myself. Because it's one nature. And then she says something very interesting, since we are at it, about in this yoga, as the consciousness grows from the, after the psychic being, the next is cosmic. So one begins to universalize. Then each one of us on this path becomes a representative of all others of this type. So the difficulty seems to become much more. Because it's not enough that, you know, it's like in the mohalla, no? People ask you, how have you, you know, cleaned your house? You will say, you know, I have got this special thing. Can you please, you know, my bathroom also needs a bit of cleaning. No, you take it, no, no, you once show us. Then after some time, you are cleaning everybody's bathroom because you are the person who is the master plumber, who has mastered the art. So once you conquer your difficulty within you, Sri Aurobindo says, you have to conquer it again and again as a representative of this difficulty in others. That is the contribution of each one walking this path for the world. People often ask, that what are you people doing? No free hospitals. No, this thing, no. We are called upon to do something so much more difficult. And once one person can conquer it, that's why Mother says, win your little victories. If you can conquer it within yourself, it will have its effect on others, because nature is one. Nature is not many. And we can take number of examples. in a colony, you keep your house clean. After some time, people will begin to notice. It will have an indirect impact. So that's the whole idea. There are multiple purushas, one prakriti. But there is a sense created as if this is my prakriti, where you are anish, you have to be witness, and you have to be Lord, because that's simpler to handle to start with. After you have worked out this inner freedom, soul gets the freedom, then yes, you can participate in the larger universal movement or the collective yoga. That's when collective yoga begins. Otherwise, it's just, you know, we sit together and that's not. So he says all these are pragmatic truths. But there is the reality and the apparent duality. The duality is also necessary that the spirit may be at any time at liberty to draw back from any formation of its nature and dissolve all formations or accept or enforce a new or a higher formation. So there is a difference between being caught as anish in the same prakriti and a difference when you have actually been able to liberate and yet you are in it, apparently in it, working upon it. What is the difference? Once you have realized the freedom, you can any time withdraw the sanction, you can detach and you go. That's what we see in the yogis. That when they are working, they are as if, you know, like anybody else, they are asking, how are you? Oh, nice prawn pakoras. Sri Ramakrishna's example, and all this is there. But the day they have to go, they just go. Absolutely. Otherwise, they are connected with everything, but they are inwardly free. So this is where a number of yogis do that. So this freedom is first step necessary. The Purusha aspect and the Prakriti aspect go always together. And whatever status, nature or consciousness, force in action assumes, manifests or develops, there is a corresponding status of the spirit. In its supreme status, the spirit is the supreme conscious being, Purushottama, and the consciousness force is his supreme nature, Para Prakriti. So now we understand that here, a person gets angry and the soul is caught in it. It says, I am angry. I am anger. So what happens in the status of Para Prakriti and the Purushottama? Purushottama is never angry. But there is a mood of the infinite. When Para Prakriti demolishes Shiva Tandav, worlds fall apart. That is the mood, original mood. But there it is done with perfect knowledge. Complete mastery. That's the story of Shiva lying inert. And on his breast the dance continues. And here we are caught completely. So that is the basis that we cannot understand, because we think, oh, divine means all quiescent, sitting like this, like a sadhu bacha. But when you see the leela of the divine, that's why Shobinda and the mother came as one who are two. It's so much easier, imagine, you know. And the mother, her moods, many moods. Just people who saw, they couldn't understand. Because she could easily come out of this, enter into self-absorption, totally deal with one person in one way, completely different way to another person in another way. And through the same person, she could change herself completely. One day a person comes and says something, she says one thing. Next day the person comes and she would say something very different. So once the disciple asks, Mother, but yesterday this was your opinion. Mother's reply, I have no opinions. I see the truth at that moment and I act on that basis. What she is saying today may be complete, because she is free. We are bound. We have opinions. This person, he was angry with me one day. He is the most horrible person and all his life. This is the difference between being bound and being free. So we'll stop here. Tomorrow we'll take up the most rasa wala part, the highest poise, which is of Ishwara and Shakti. And then through this we can easily understand the relation of Shurabinda and the mother. Jema.